Something for the weekend. It's Trina Mara and we're thrilled to have Ricky Ross from Deacon Blue on the phone. Good morning, Ricky. How are you?
I'm very well.
We are so looking forward to you coming to Dublin. You're going to be playing at the Dunleary Pier for the open air concert on May 31st. So I'm already keeping my fingers crossed. The weather is going to be good.
I do worry about it. And it's because we have rotten weather here. And the weather is actually beautiful today in Glasgow, where I'm speaking from. So I'm hoping it'll be like that. A little warmer maybe. But yeah, really look forward to it.
I'm sure you have all sorts of mad riders. All you look for is sunshine.
Exactly. Well, to be honest, we're quite a low bar. All we look for is no rain, really. You know?
No rain, yeah.
But even if there's rain, we've played in festivals in rain. But no, if it's a nice dry day, it'll help.
It just adds something, doesn't it, to an open-air concert when the weather is good. Everybody's in great form and they're not like drowned rats looking at you.
I know, and the feet are dry, which is really important as well. We've done all kinds of festivals, but yeah, we had a run of shows a couple of years ago where everything was dry, really, really great. So hopefully that'll carry on.
Yeah, Ricky, I didn't realise you used to be a school teacher.
Well, I mean, a long time ago, for a short time in my life, yeah.
And you gave it up to become a pop star. Who does that? A good pensionable job.
What was I thinking about, yeah?
Thankfully, it worked out for you. The band Deacon Blue, the one that where you met your wife as well, and you've all these kids as a result, so it kind of went well for you.
It's worked out okay, yeah. We're kind of very grateful for music.
It's funny, I remember, you know, growing up, my sister literally had Deacon Blue posters on every inch of the bedroom wall, the bedroom I had to share with. When we were still listening to cassettes, some people don't even know what a cassette is.
Yeah.
It's funny, my daughter came across a cassette I had in the house the other day and she just kept looking at it, like she didn't know what it was. So what do you remember about your daily routine, say, in the late 80s onwards? Or was there any routine? Was it constantly doing interviews or what was it?
Yeah, I often think, what was it like? Because, you know, pre-kids and all that kind of thing. So you didn't have... I always remember that when we got radio interviews, I always remember that the Radio 1 breakfast show in the UK, if it chose to interview you, obviously phoned. And I used to think, who could possibly be up at this? You know, who could possibly be alive at 8 o'clock in the morning or 7:30 that you had to sort of... They phoned you. I mean, this is lunacy. You know, why would anyone want to speak to anyone? I remember, because we were just always late. We were quite late people.
Yeah.
So I always remember that. But it was just, I think it was very varied because certainly in these times, things moved really fast. You would no sooner have done something than your manager phone up and said, actually, you've got to come and do a TV show. You're on tour quite a lot. We did a lot of live stuff. I mean, we were on the road a lot. And then once you'd stopped doing that, you were trying to write some songs and then get back in the studios. I think for about 3 or 4 years, it was really all go. And then we were able to sort of, I suppose, just reflect a little bit. But it seemed like a kind of very busy time, certainly the late 80s.
Mm. I remember, you know, reading Smash Hits magazines, and they were great at painting the picture that you were sitting down with them, hanging out with them, you know, they were getting all the gossip and you were great friends. Was that the case, or was it kind of like a phone interview instead?
It was probably exactly like this, yeah.
No, really? You've ruined my childhood. I thought Smash Hits, you were all great pals with the journalists. No.
Yeah, I think occasionally people would come out with us on the road. I think people did come out and do things on the road. It just seemed you were doing endless things. And I'll remember when we went to America first time as well, you had to do lots of these, the kind of things that you folks probably ask people to do, radio IDs, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you're listening to such and such.
I'll have to ask you at the end.
Things, you know, like on cassette, what you were talking about, you know, like these cassettes up of these places that you'd never been to, saying, you know, yeah, when I'm in the Garden State, I'm always tuned in to you, all this kind of stuff. Like, wow, we're never going to get to Iowa. What's all this about?
Oh, that's really funny. So you had to become a bit of an actor as well then.
Oh, yeah. You had to do a bit of faking it. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So the debut album, Rain Town, came out in 87 and sold 1 million copies. Overall, though, I think you've about 6 million or more, or you can probably correct me, probably more than that at this stage.
But, no, I think it's pretty well.
Yeah, but in the first album, you really hear the struggle with money, especially in the song Loaded. So were you broke at the time, at the beginning?
Yeah, we were. I think everyone...
I suppose
time,
everyone was broke, weren't they, in the 80s, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough time. And it's funny because it was two different perspectives of the 80s. There's, you know, people, there was definitely that kind of London, you know, financial markets kind of people who thought the 80s were just the time of plenty. And I think for most people, certainly the people that we knew, even the working people, they weren't well off. And probably more pointedly, you know, to get on, just to make music, I decided to give up my job and just sign on. I mean, something you could do at the time. You could sign on and just be unemployed. I just thought that's the only way I'm going to have time to do it and just hope that something comes up. Mm. And I'd signed a publishing deal where I'd got some money in advance. So I was kind of able to sort of float some of the band's demos and, you know, playing for recording stuff and some equipment, stuff like that. So I just was able to do some of that. But, you know, essentially people weren't well off, and people that we knew weren't well off. It was a fairly tough time.
So were you actually on the dole as Deacon Blue started then?
Yeah, Doogie and I, the two kind of fun ones. Doogie was at music school. He was at what's now called the Conservatoire, studying percussion. And I was teaching at the very start, and I was just about to give up my job. It's like 85, I guess. And so from 85, towards the end of 85, and then actually to 86, we got a record deal. It felt like a long time. It was only about 9 months. And then we got a record deal and got some money. And that was really great. I mean, these days, that doesn't happen at all. I mean, I think most young bands I know actually will do three or four things. They'll play in other bands, or, you know, work in cafes and stuff like that just to survive. So in some ways, it was easier than, much easier than it is now, because there's a possibility out there of record companies coming along and sort of funding what you're doing.
Yeah, you could actually concentrate on making the music.
Yeah.
I think now as well, a lot of the money that musicians make automatically goes straight back into the marketing and stuff. So they rarely see it, you know?
Yeah, and also where the money comes from. And at the time, you know, people were still buying records. And I mean, really, people just don't buy records. So, I mean, and everything you did was to sort of sell records and hopefully the records would make money. But of course, now that's different. Yeah. So, yeah, it was completely different. It was an interesting, the whole business is sort of turned around on its head.
There was nothing better, though, than going into a record shop and buying the latest song that you wanted, though. It was just so brilliant. You were waiting for it to come out, you know?
I know. I mean, it's so weird to explain. You know, my kids, my son's really into music and quite, my youngest is a little community radio DJ and stuff like that. But his access to music is so phenomenal. I mean, because he could just stream anything, he'd find anything. And I said, you know, when we were young, if we didn't have the record, I mean, some of these records that I've never had, it still occurs to me. It's only occurs to me now going, oh, wait a minute, I can find that still on Spotify, you know, Spotify. But I'd never had it for 20 years. So it was a record that I didn't own, so I'd never heard it, kind of thing. And unless your friend had it, you taped it from them, or you bought it secondhand, you never would hear it.
Or you tried to tape it off the radio.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? You'd be like waiting for the DJ to stop talking and press record quickly. Not that I advise anybody to do that, of course. Okay. Dignity and Chocolate Girl, just absolutely beautiful songs, massive hits as well. Did you know that you had a hit in your hands when those songs were written?
I don't think so, because we're just of that mindset that we just, you know, made the songs that we thought were important to us. It was only really after. I always remember being in the studio when we were doing Rain Town, a producer, and I said, well, you know, do you think we could bring a single out? And he said, look, it's like 12, 13-year-old girls that buy singles mainly. Do you think any of them will buy this? And I thought, no. But I think there was a good thing about that as well, which was we just didn't think about it. So we just made the record we wanted to make. I think people enjoyed it for the record that it was. And eventually we did get, you mentioned some of the songs that came on the radio. So that was good. And these songs became a big part of people's lives. So that was good.
Who was your biggest competition back then, Ricky, in terms of the charts?
I'm not sure. I can't remember thinking about it, because we didn't really get in the charts until about, I think 88 was when we really broke. When Real One Kid came out, I always remember that the only time we ever nearly had a number one single was, the guy that kept us off was, I can't even remember his name now, but he had big specs and he was a children's entertainer, and he had a version of Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny.
Oh, Timmy Mallett, was it?
Timmy Mallett, yeah, and he was like number one and we were number two.
The Itsy Bitsy song, Yellow Bikini, that one.
Yeah, and that was like the only time that we ever thought that we actually might have got a number one single, and we had a number two for a couple of weeks. So that was the only time I remember actually thinking about that, you know.
But didn't the second album, didn't that knock Madonna off the top as well?
Yeah, it was a number one album, yeah. That was great, it was amazing when that happened, yeah.
Yeah, those songs were brilliant. Ferga Sings the Blues, Real Gone Kid. I could go on forever, all these amazing songs are so good. You're still writing a lot, and you went on to write a lot as well for other artists. So who have you written for?
Well, Over Your Way for Ronan Keating, for James Blunt, for Jamie Cullum, Nancy Griffiths, for Will Young. I did a couple, probably about 10 years, quite a lot of writing, and, you know, had quite a lot of success. I just got more and more involved when Deacon Blue, when we made The Hipsters in 2012, which was first of three albums that we made in a sort of short space of time, and we sort of came back decided, like, if we're going to be a band, we're going to make records and be creative. And since we've done that, I've just been so busy doing stuff for myself, for ourselves. I really haven't had time to do as much writing for other people.
Yeah. But ditched poor Al Ronan.
Early 2000s. Ah, no, he's moved on well.
What song did you write for him?
A couple of things on an album. I think it was his second solo album. Song he cut of mine called She Gets Me Inside, and I went and played to his record company, and then a song called Turn It On, which is a title track for that album as well.
So can you ring all these people up now and blag free concert tickets if you like?
Yeah,
I love it.
No.
It's funny because, you know, when you work in a radio station, everybody that I know thinks that I have this magical drawer where I have concert tickets for every show you can imagine.
Yeah.
Even if they're sold out, I have a batch of tickets waiting to give to somebody. I'm sure you get that as well when you're in music. People think that you're able to get a ticket to anything.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and also the most common thing I get now, and it's via social media, is people wanting you to do things that are just actually physical. You know, people want you to turn up at the wedding and sing at the wedding on the day that you're doing a gig along the road, so you could do this. And then they'll say to you, and you're invited to stay to the wedding, and also you can have something to eat with. You know what I'm saying? You know, thanks.
That is so funny. As if, you know, do you have to give them a gift as well while you're there?
Yeah, you have to go to honeymoon with them as well. Yeah.
Graham was one of the original members of Deacon Blue who died then. God, it must be 15 years ago now, is it?
Yes, it was. It's actually 15 years ago.
And he was so young. He was only 47 when he passed away. Was that a massive shock for you and for the rest of the guys?
Well, he was ill for 5 years, so when he died, it wasn't a shock, of course.
But so young, though, you know.
Yeah, when he had pancreatic cancer, which is a terrible one of these cancers that's still not a lot of research done in it, and it's just very difficult to beat. And some people would die some people have been diagnosed with it and died within a very short time. So Graham, you know, Graham had 5 years. He went through some really tough times, so it was an incredible learning experience for us, you know, to go through that with him.
Yeah,
we got very close during that time as well, because the band had been apart before that, so we hadn't seen so much of each other for a few years before that. And we keep up very close contact with his family. His wife, actually, when I posted up, I think it was maybe last week, it would have been his 62nd birthday. And I you know, you just realise there's so much of life that he hadn't seen, and his kids aren't grown up. And so, yeah, really, really sad time.
Yeah, it's good that you're keeping in touch, though, with the family, because, you know, when someone passes away, everyone's there in the first week or two, aren't they?
Yeah.
The door never stops ringing and people never stop phoning you, and then everyone disappears. So it's good to stick around, you know.
Well,
for
the
them.
Long story is that Graham's son is in a band. His son is in a band, and he contacted me. He said, "Austin, can I bring the band down to soundcheck when you're playing Manchester, just to kind of hang out and see?" I said, "Of course you can." So they came down, and then when we finished the soundcheck, he had his guys in his band there, and they came up on stage. And we said, "Well, come up and give us a song." So they grabbed the instruments, and Gregor, our guitarist, just sat in. They didn't have the drummer with them, so Gregor just sat in and played drums with them, and they played a song for us at the Manchester Apollo. So it was a nice kind of...
That's lovely.
Really great to sort of see that.
Yeah. Let's hope your drummer doesn't leg it now into their band instead. Well, listen, it's been great talking to you, Ricky. Your sound, as always. And we look forward to seeing you in Dublin. You're going to be here at the Open Air Concert in Dunleary Pier on May 31st. Headlining, of course. Are you going to be doing all our favourite songs, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks so much, Ricky. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tina. Lovely to speak to you.
You too. This is Something for the Weekend on Classic Hits.